You're listening to the Hammershed Podcast. And welcome everyone to today's show. Before we get started, I wanted to remind everyone that every month we are giving away a free book to one of our loyal listeners. Here at Hammershed Podcast, we believe in always trying to expand our knowledge and education. Brett and I have compiled a list of books on fitness, professional development, and nutrition. Each month, one lucky listener will randomly be selected to win our monthly book giveaway. To sign up, go to hammershed.com and click on Monthly Giveaway. On today's training talk, I visit Brett at his facility, Constant Forward Progress. After catching up on how our training has been going for the both of us, Brett and I discuss the importance of not just focusing on one aspect of strength training. As always, please welcome back Brett Hamilton. And today we're at Constant Forward Progress to do a live podcast. How are you doing today, Brett?
I'm doing good, Greg. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. It's a cool little spot. I really enjoy this place, and you got a lot of good things going on here.
It's a fun little training space, and definitely feels like a place where you're going to get work done.
Yeah, for sure. So what have you been up to?
Let's see. Last couple of weeks, I've been shifting some gears, shifting a few goals of mine that I've been working on. I recently achieved a rep goal on the pistol squat that mm-hmm. I've been working towards for a long time. And my goal was 15 reps in a row with body weight each leg. And I did that a week ago Friday. And as soon as I finished that goal, I decided that my new goal is just to start adding weight and focusing on lower reps, higher load. Because for me, for a long time, I was able to do weight with a pistol squat, but I wasn't able to do it with my body weight because I would keel over and fall on my butt. And, that was due to some, lack of mobility and stability in my hips and ankles basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've addressed those now. And so I want to shift back to doing it with weight again. And I did my first workout with weight, on Friday afternoon this week. And, it felt really good. I'm trying to remember how many reps I got in. Looks like I think I did three sets of three. I went up a bell size for each set because I didn't really have a clue where I was going to start.
Yeah.
So I ended up doing a set of three with 14 kg, which felt like I could have done another three or four, honestly. But it just felt stable.
That's good.
Yeah. It felt like I could hold this bottom position. And it felt strong. And then the coming up part was kind of, it was less consequential versus the going down part was where I always felt like I was going to lose it before. And this time I was like, okay, I got this. I kind of owned that position. So it was exciting to see that change.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, yeah.
So do you have a specific goal on how heavy you want to go?
Well, if I were to put a long-term goal out there, there's this Beast Tamer Challenge that has been around for a couple of years now. And, basically use a 48 kg kettlebell.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three exercises if you wanted to be like the true beast tamer. There's a pull-up with a 48 kg, a pistol squat with a 48 kg, and an overhead press with a 48 kg. I think for me, personally, where I'm at right now, the pistol squat with a 48 kg would probably be the most realistic.
Yeah.
I'm working on pull-ups with weight right now, but my one rep max is with a 24. So it's about 50% of where I would need to be. It's a ways to go, yeah.
So, they call that the Beast Tamer.
Mm-hmm.
And on the women's side, it's the Iron Maiden Challenge.
Yep.
And we just had Artemis Scandalides on the show mm-hmm. a few weeks ago, and she was talking about how she did the Iron Maiden Challenge. And I think she's the lightest one, or at the time of
that
her doing it, she was
me.
The lightest.
She's not very big.
Yeah. And that was pretty big. Can you remind me what the weight for the women is?
It's 24 kg.
24 kg.
Yeah,
so.
Which is no small task for
hers was
ladies.
Overhead press. That was the big challenge for her.
Yeah. No, I've followed her on Facebook for a while now. I'm friends with her, and I remember she posted a video a few months ago of her doing I want to say it was two reps with the 24 kg, and she actually made it look pretty easy.
Yeah.
And so, it may have been a problem for her at one point, but when I watched her do it this time, it was like, oh,
she's got it.
She got it.
That's cool.
No big deal. So, yeah, kudos to her and the other people who have attempted it. And I recently looked on Strong First's website because they've actually got a list of people who've passed it.
Uh-huh.
The Iron Maiden and the Beast Tamer Challenge. And the Iron Maiden list is very small.
Yeah.
There's not very many ladies who've done
tough.
It. And even the Beast Tamer, it's maybe 20 people. Not very many who've done all three.
So you're going to go for it?
I don't know. I
get you on record.
Yeah. Might have to bulk up for the overhead press part.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Strength's never a weakness.
No, that is for sure. But yeah, so that's been a big focus of my training. Shifting gears in the pistol squats. I'm also working on weighted airborne lunges.
Yeah.
And I'm using a pair of kettlebells for those. And that was actually, I had been doing bodyweight airborne lunges for a long time, and I read a book around Christmas time, January, called Ultimate Athleticism, which was written by Max Schenck.
Yeah.
And he's now doing workshops for kind of in promotion of the book and also to expand upon the principles that he touched on in the book. But he basically thinks the airborne lunge is one of those exercises that if you're going to do a squat, that's the squat to do.
Like if you could only pick one, that's
right.
The one.
Yeah. And then the other movements that he would pick would be a deadlift of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And then L-sit to a handstand press, which obviously nobody's going to get that day one, right? Like
right.
You have to work up to that. But he has progressions to build up to something like that. And then the front lever. And anyways, the airborne lunge has been a really interesting movement for me to master because I've had some issues with my ankle mobility on my right leg for a long, long time. And I feel like just in the last couple of months, I've finally busted through the plateau that I had, and I learned a mobilization from one of the physical therapists that I work with that mm-hmm. I can do on myself whenever I'm feeling like it's stiff, and
cool.
It's like magic. Like if I'm feeling anything before I start squatting, I do that for about 5 reps and then it's done.
So what's the
basically I'll get into a kneeling stance and I just put I put my thumb on the backside of my lateral malleolus mm-hmm. on my ankle. I just apply some pressure
mm-hmm.
and I basically kind of just do an ankle rocker forward over that, push my knee over my toe
uh-huh.
While I'm pushing on the malleolus, and it rotates something out of the way. and all of a sudden I'll feel whatever was binding just start loosening up, and then it just clears up.
Nice.
So I'm not exactly sure what's going on in there. It's an old injury just from playing soccer. I kicked the ground. When I was going for a ball one time and kind of just like I tore something.
Yeah.
I hurt it, but you know, never really rehabbed it, never did anything for it. And I think that was why I lost a lot of that flexibility. But yeah, so the airborne lunge has been a big part of my training, and I'm using a pair of kettlebells with that now. That's been a lot of fun because for me, I was doing a lot of double kettlebell front squats
mm-hmm.
In the last few years, and there came a point where I was a little hesitant to go heavier because of having to clean the weights up.
Yeah.
And I think I was using a pair of 32s, and I wasn't confident in going to 36s,
mm-hmm.
and so I started searching for ways of making progress beyond that point, and switching to doing single leg stuff has kind of made that progress happen again.
Do you do anything with weighted vests or weight vests?
I do have a weight vest, and I haven't done anything with them recently. So that's something I've been thinking about, actually.
Yeah, that's a good way
to bring that back.
Add more even load that you don't have to handle. It's
right.
Just there.
Yeah, that's a good point. You can make yourself heavier.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's something I've been working on. I want to say what I do most recently. I think I did 3 sets of 8 with 14s, so a pair of 14s, and my legs were toast.
Yeah.
Doing that. And I try to keep my rest periods relatively brief because I don't have a lot of time to do my own workouts. I fit it in between clients every day at 3:30.
Mm-hmm.
And so I give myself maybe 30 to 60 seconds between sets. So by that third set, my legs are done.
Yeah. I bet. Yeah. That's not a lot of rest.
No. And then lastly, the other big thing I've been working on, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when I was on, been working on these Nordic hamstring curls.
Yeah.
And so it's been about 8 weeks now that I've been working on these, and I've noticed a big difference in where it was from day one to where it is now. I've been basically putting my feet underneath the handles of some 100-pound dumbbells kind of give myself something to hold on to. And then I've basically figured out a way of having some kind of assistance with the band. And I have it hanging behind me, and it just kind of helps lower me down a little bit under control. And then on the way up, it gives me a little bit of assistance pulling back up.
Sure.
And we've got three resistance levels of our Grey Cook bands. And I originally started with the heaviest one to give myself the most help. And I've since worked on, depending on how many reps I'm doing, I've adjusted the resistances, but just on Friday, 2 days ago, I was doing a set of eight, and I was using the heaviest resistance again. And my wife walked in right as I was doing my first rep, and I kind of looked over at her. I was like, look at this. And I'm lowering myself down, and I got about 6 inches from the ground. I was just holding it there.
Oh, cool.
And I could actually stop myself, and then I lowered a little bit further, and I finally touched down without plopping. And then I pulled myself off the floor without having to push at all. Nice. That was the first time I've done that.
That's something that I'm going to need to get into.
It's fun.
Yeah, and you'll have to show me your setup over here when we're done. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think that, like, from everything I've read about people who do bodyweight calisthenics on a regular basis, like, it's very squat dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot, like, if you're purposefully choosing to not use weights, like, if that's your mission, then it's really hard to get any kind of hinge movement in unless you're going to just do like body weight stuff.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get much out of it.
No.
And for me, it's like, okay, if I'm going to do body weight exercises, like, it's important to me that I have balance in everything, because if I'm going to be squat dominant, I know I'm going to be overdeveloping my quads, and obviously my glutes will be working, but I'm going to underdevelop those hamstrings. And as a runner in the past, I've had a lot of hamstring injuries.
Yeah.
And I still like to sprint, and I know I don't want to set myself up for imbalances and have more hamstring strains. So this was kind of a way of prevention.
Yeah.
And plus, it's a fun challenge because it's something I've never been able to do, never really thought I could do, but now I'm starting to get some belief that, hey, maybe I can do this. Mm-hmm. So.
No, it's good to have those exercises, especially since we're always talking about how the posterior chain is always weak and
mm-hmm.
everyone needs to work on it. So mm-hmm. It makes sense, you know, now when you think about it, not having weight, it is really hard to work the hamstrings without doing something like this with the Nordic
hamstring curl. It's got a couple of different names, but it seems to be the one that pops up when I've read about it in scholarly research articles.
Well, and it looks a lot like what you'd see someone do on the glute ham developer machine.
Yeah, very similar.
Much the same thing.
Yep, very similar. The big difference that I can tell is that when you're doing the glute ham developer, since your hips are also kind of locked in place, that your lower back can get a lot of extension too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to work your hamstrings a lot, but depending on what your training goal is, you could also work a lot of lumbar strengthening.
Mm-hmm.
And my body's really interesting, but I had a lumbar injury about 6 years ago too. And for me, doing any kind of forceful extension on my lumbar spine is a no-no
mm-hmm.
at this point. And so this has been kind of neat because I can get the benefits of the hamstring strength, but not have to worry about having my back kill me afterwards.
Yeah.
So.
Now, and we're always talking about progressions too.
Right.
And, I can't off the top of my head remember who posted this, and I'll put it in the show notes, the video. I saw someone doing this, and the progression for this, the first step was just hinging at the hips and not at the knees.
Are you talking for the Nordic ham curl?
For the Nordic ham curl.
Yeah.
So you have your feet anchored, you keep your femurs in place, mm-hmm. and then you just hinge forward.
Just kind of,
that's a good way to kind of mm-hmm. ease into it without using resistance bands or something.
Right. Yeah, and that's, I've read a few articles. I want to say I read one on T Nation about that exercise, and that was a progression they were talking about. I've noticed that I've kind of done that naturally, depending mm-hmm. on which resistance band level I'm working on, because I just have to.
Right.
Especially like when I'm pulling myself off of the floor, I'll have to kind of hinge at the waist and then continue pulling. And then once I get some momentum coming back up, then I can straighten back out. So it's been interesting, but like I was saying on Friday, this was the first time I was able to basically keep that posture the whole time going down and coming up without having to hinge.
Yeah.
So it made definitely making some progress there.
And you find that it makes you more aware of how things move. Like, like you have better control of your hips and glutes and hamstrings that way.
Definitely.
I mean, it's just a movement that you don't do any in any other situation.
And definitely. And it's one of those movements too, that it doesn't really feel like, it's not like a compound exercise, because there's not a lot of, I mean, really there's only two joints
right.
involved, your hips and your knees. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing it really well, you're really only bending at your knees.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's pretty isolation, or it's pretty much an isolation exercise, but depending on your goals and also your injury history, I think it could be a hugely beneficial one too, especially if you're a calisthenics enthusiast, because it would be a way of providing balance to your posterior chain when you wouldn't be getting it with traditional squats.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that way, it's going to be one that I think moving forward, I'm going to include in my program always, because for me, I just don't want to deal with any hamstring strains anymore. And
yeah,
I had one recently about 6-8 weeks ago, and it, you know, it was the first time I've injured it in almost 8 years, and it was the other leg, not the original injury leg. And so I was just kind of annoyed,
frustrated
more than anything.
A little
bit, I was like, wow, what the heck?
Yeah.
You know? So there's no reason for this to be happening. But I also know that, like, I'm squatting much more than I'm deadlifting and doing these hamstring curls now. So I'm definitely overbalancing myself, and it was kind of a wake up call. Like, hey, I probably need to address this.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been more or less, the big breakthroughs I've had in my own training. Now you're still squatting every day.
I am.
Yep. What's new, in that area?
Oh, well, a little bit actually. You wouldn't think there's a whole lot of change. I'm squatting every day, but, I've talked about how I mixed it up a few months ago and started doing more powerlifting type stuff, heavier stuff,
mm-hmm.
not working up to a heavy single every day, trying to build my intensity and volume up a little bit. And so I finished a 12-week program that I wrote for myself 2 weeks ago. It had huge results. Mm-hmm. I increased my, well, I finally got 405 in the squat,
which is
a good one to join the 4-plate club.
Yep.
Increased my deadlift by 40 pounds.
Hmm.
So,
over
that was good.
Over 12 weeks. That's impressive.
Over 12 weeks. bench really didn't go anywhere.
Uh-huh.
That's been really frustrating. But I'm doing this program again, and I'm actually reducing my volume even more in the squats. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have any idea how many attempted lifts you do in a month?
I could find it. I keep track
curious.
Of everything very meticulously.
Yeah.
I could. The volume I keep track of really close, and that's what I pay attention to.
Yeah.
But as far as how many attempts, I could look it up.
Yeah.
So I'm reducing my volume even more. Before, I was doing still quite a bit on my off days, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think I'm going to go really low intensity, really low reps, just everything. I'm going to continue to squat every day because that's been my mission. I've decided I'm going to do it for a year. So I'm going to do it for a year.
Squatting every day.
Squatting every day.
How far are you now?
224, 225.
Getting pretty close.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I got to coast to the finish line on the squatting every day, because I do want to start powerlifting and competing in powerlifting. So now I need to actually focus my squats, reduce them a little bit, do 2 or 3 times a week. So 2 or 3 times a week, I'm going really heavy, really intense for my powerlifting program. And then the other days, I'm kind of taking it off. But which gives me room to practice some squatting things that I want to make changes on. I've got my hips shift a little bit, and I got to work on fixing that. I'm going to start doing some more box squats after this program's over. So I'm going to practice my box squats, work on my hip mobility.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of tight, and I need to go a little bit wider, and I just don't
I've seen you squat with your body weight. This guy doesn't look like he has any mobility issues in his hips, going into flexion at least.
Right.
But
it's funny, you add some load and you actually, that's where you see things change, and that's where you see the dysfunction.
Yeah.
And that's why we'll talk about assessments in another episode, but I like weighted assessments because they bring out some more stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, I can get in really good positions with no weight. My squat looks pretty clean,
mm-hmm.
but then you put me over 80%, and that's where things are like,
right.
Oh crap, that's, you know, you got a problem here and there.
Yep.
Anyway, so I'm going to work on that stuff on my off days. And I think, I don't know, I haven't figured it out. I may do a competition after this cycle in July. And if I don't, then I'll do something later towards the end of the year. And then if I do that one in July, I'll also do another one later in the year.
Where's the competition in July?
It's actually at Chris Duffin's place.
Oh, okay.
So I don't
Clackamas,
know if it's
right.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to fit into my schedule or not, but I was actually talking to Jaron mm-hmm. this morning about it. And so we'll get that figured out. But So that's what I'm doing. Hopefully we'll get some good numbers on the first meet.
Now, how is your deadlift going?
Deadlift's going really good. Friday, I did 385. I was supposed to do three sets of four, mm-hmm. and on my third set, I ended up getting 8. So
that's impressive.
I keep tracking forward,
and that's a personal best for that many reps.
For that weight. Okay. Yeah, and that's double overhand grip, and that's actually where I failed was my grip.
Yeah,
I was feeling really good on Friday. I don't know what it was, but I probably could have done 10.
Yeah,
but my grip went out.
Yeah,
which is good. I kind of like to fail on my grip rather than herniate a disc or pull something.
I think it's your body's way of telling you, hey,
you're done.
Yep, you're done. Self-preservation.
Yeah. I always tend to do that with the deadlift. It's something I don't lift heavy or I haven't lift heavy in the past with the deadlift. So it's a new experience for me. And so I get kind of hesitant. And so I always err on the side of caution for the deadlift.
Yeah, as you should. I think, always feeling 100% confident that you can finish that next rep.
Right.
Probably don't want to attempt it if you're not confident in it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's not a competition.
Right. So. Yeah. Let's live to lift another day is one of my favorite sayings.
Yep.
So you didn't talk about a new experience you had with the squat I invited you over to the garage gym and you got to do some barbell squats for the first time in how many years?
It's been probably about 2.5 years.
So. And now that it's been a week, reflect on it and tell me that experience.
To begin with, I had no expectations going into this experience because to backtrack a little bit, I had a pretty serious lumbar injury about 6 years ago, about 2010. I'm finishing up my year at graduate school. I'm still trying to run track. I had a year of eligibility left because I was injured my sophomore year, and I was able to save that year. And anyways, I injured my back in the weight room, and I was doing a cable row, and nothing happened that was out of the norm. I just set the weight back and I scooted forward, used my whole body to bring the weight back. I didn't lean forward with my back or anything, but something happened and I just felt a boing and something snapped. And I was in spasms after about 5 minutes, and I was able to get myself home, but I had to kind of peel myself out of the car, and I had no idea what happened. And this was October of 2010. And so there was a lot of school year left and a lot of track season left before I was able to get any physical therapy on it. And so I basically did what I could that year, but I lost a lot of my ability to do any kind of lumbar flexion. I was able to bend forward and get my hands to touch the tip of my kneecaps, and that was about as far as I could bend forward. And I used to be able to put my palms on the ground. And that was consistent for the rest of that school year. I could barely pick up my knees, could barely bend forward, and just had a lot of pain with doing so, and became really, really fearful of movement for the first time in my life. And fast forward a couple of years, I basically stopped doing any barbell exercises because of that injury, and had resorted to using mostly weight machines. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of leg pressing, did a lot of hamstring curls, quad extensions, pretty much the antithesis of everything I represent now.
Right.
And had become very hesitant in just general movement. When I finally started getting this back healed, and I was working as a personal trainer, I was originally at a corporate health club and then eventually at my previous location, which was called Moda Fitness before it closed down and changed to another business. It was feeling pretty good, and we had Olympic platforms at that location, and so I started squatting again, and I basically said, hey, I haven't done this in years, like, let's start from the ground and work our way back up. And even though I thought my back was feeling pretty good, I could still feel like some effects after every time I squatted. Front squat seemed to felt pretty good, but whenever I back squatted, I always had some issues, and there was one incident about 2.5 years ago where I did feel something give and felt my back shift. And again, I was in spasms.
Mm-hmm.
It took me about a month to get out of that pain. And so I was trying to figure out, like, should I keep doing this? But you know, fast forward to now, it's been 2.5 years. I've been 100% focused on kettlebell and calisthenic exercises. I can squat with my body weight in ranges of motion that I never could before. And so I've really kind of owned movement in a new way. And so it was kind of cool and exciting to go over to Greg's and get a chance to do these back squats again. And I was actually feeling pretty confident, like, hey, I think I could got this, because one, I'm much better with my range of motion, and two, I know how to use my diaphragm and brace my core correctly. And so we did some warm-up sets, and then I ended up doing 3 sets of 5. And again, I was kind of hesitant, and so I erred on the light side to begin with. And so I started with about 100, and I think it was 165.
Yeah.
And then we went up 20 pounds on the second set. And that was a challenge for me, actually. To compare to the way I used to do back squats in college, I was probably doing maybe a quarter squat depth. My hips were maybe 6 inches above where my knees were.
Right.
And this was the opposite. My hips were quite a few inches below my knees.
Yeah, you had good range of motion.
So I was getting a full range of motion squat out of this. I'd never quite felt that intensity of contraction in my glutes, my hamstrings from the bottom of that squat, because I never was able to do it before.
Yeah.
So that was a new experience for me. And that second set felt really good. I was getting a little tired towards the end, but felt good to me. And then last set, I decided up at, did we go 195 or was it 205?
205.
205. Okay. First three felt pretty good. Last two, I was definitely getting tired, and I think I lost my core brace a little bit there. I didn't feel any pain or anything like that. Felt pretty good after the workout, but it was the next morning on Sunday. I woke up, I can't touch my toes.
Oh no.
Crap. And so I spent most of that day just going back to flexion. And I would basically sit in my chair and just grab the chair legs and bend over and just kind of pull into it. And by the end of the day, I was able to get my hands to the floor again, and things were restoring. But what I did notice is that the rest of the week I was getting some ache in my left hip, and I also was starting to feel an ache, kind of like a burning ache in my shin, and then also in my left foot. And I was like, oh, this is new. I've never felt this before. And I knew it was my back. And even though I didn't ever like feel like something happened when I was squatting, I knew that whatever I had done, something was causing referred pain. So fortunately, as the week went on, it got better and better and better. And by yesterday, it had pretty much abolished completely. Yeah. But it was just, I needed to do flexion 4 or 5 times a day for about 10 reps apiece. And
so you're feeling better now, though?
I feel pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you probably just, like you said, you lost your bracing on the last couple reps. You overdid it a little bit. And
yeah, I probably went a little heavy on that last set.
Right.
So if I were to do it again, I'd probably stick around 185 and just try to build up some reps there. And
We were talking about this while we were doing our squats of how different the barbell squat is. Uh-huh. No matter how you hold the kettlebell or how you can't replicate a barbell squat without a barbell.
Right. Well, I mean, you can. A double front squat with a kettlebell is pretty similar in feel to a weighted front squat with a barbell. But then you put the bar on your back, it's completely different. And that's where I struggle is getting into that that motion with the bar on my back and my shoulders are abducted and externally rotated. It's like my upper back mobility and my shoulder external rotation is pretty good. But my posterior capsules in my shoulder is also very stiff. So getting into that position is uncomfortable for me. And I think that just putting myself in that position, my chest wants to really arch and open up to accommodate those shoulders because it's uncomfortable.
And then you get the scissoring open motion.
Yep. And so that's when I get too much extension in my spine. And so for me, it's like if I'm trying to zip things up and try to, you know, keep the belly button and my torso kind of tilted up towards each other and to keep everything in alignment, like that puts more pressures on my shoulders. And it's kind of like this battle that the heavier the weight gets, the harder it is for me to do that because it hurts to hold it, basically.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, if I wanted to try to address if I wanted to keep squatting with the bar, I would need to address my shoulders first and foremost and make that feel more comfortable.
Funny, people don't realize that shoulder mobility is really important for a barbell squat.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
So are you going to keep trying it? Are you going to explore some more barbell squats in the near future? Or are you going
to? Yeah, I'm open to the idea. I think I'm just going to have to humble myself a little bit and just accept that, hey, Just because you can do all these things with your own body weight doesn't mean that I can, you know, just bust out a twice body weight squat first try. Right.
Right.
So, it's totally different beast, and, it's, you know, it's a fun challenge. And I think, moving forward, it would definitely be something that, my body would benefit from. I just have to be smart about how I approach it.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I've decided. I think I'm going to go all in, and we've talked about this a little bit, with the home gym.
Mm-hmm.
I had pretty minimal equipment and just the squat rack. And that was an entirely different challenge for the two of us.
Yeah. Because
there's a little bit of a height difference.
Yes, there is.
And the racks that I have don't adjust very quickly. So I think those are going to get retired or, you know, put in the attic or something. I'm going to go with the whole power rack.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a bench that's on its way. I build out a platform. And I think I'm going to do what I can to get out of your traditional commercial gym and make the home gym the primary gym. So that's something that's going to be coming along in the near future and should be a fun journey.
Totally worth it too.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Very cool.
What do you got going for continuing education? What are you reading right now?
So I just started reading this book. I read about it, in another book that I read, last summer, and I've continue to use it as a resource, but there was a book written by Al Kavadlo, who's a calisthenics, I guess you could call him calisthenics teacher, guru. He lives in New York City, but it was called Raising the Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a pull-up encyclopedia, basically.
Okay.
You know, it had a lot of progressions of various pulling exercises, and really smartly laid out, had great illustrations and pictures. And even some example training programs. And I've incorporated some of the exercises that Al used into our own kind of training system for pull-ups. And anyways, in that book, he recommended a book written by another author named Stephen Lowe called Overcoming Gravity. And this was a book I got for Christmas this year as a gift for my wife. And I hadn't yet really delved into it because it literally is about 1,000 pages long. It's huge.
Yeah.
And it is completely... like, it is probably the most in-depth training manual I've ever seen. There are no photos. It's all illustrations, diagrams, and a lot of text.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very big book. And so I started reading it, and my wife has been struggling with her handstands. Not the actual doing the handstand part, but getting up onto the wall doing a handstand. She can back herself into the wall just fine. And get into a handstand position, but she's really wanted to overcome that and be able to kick up. And I think it's something that she's been having a little bit of anxiety about. So I started delving into this manual and seeing if it has any suggestions
mm-hmm.
for that. Lo and behold, there were some good suggestions, about starting from a standing position and, kind of moving into it, putting the palms on the ground from that standing position and then kicking into it, so you get a little bit of momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's helped her, actually. She's getting a little bit more comfortable, but we'd previously been trying to have her kick up from the floor with her hands on the ground to begin with, and having one of her legs just kind of elevated in the air to generate some tension in the kicking leg. And she's getting closer, but I think there wasn't quite enough power there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be helpful. But so far I've just been reading the handstand section, and the progressions for the handstands that this guy, Stephen Lowe, has written out are pretty impressive. And this book is motivating me to start tackling handstand balancing or hand balancing. Which is something so far that I haven't really had any desire to do. I've just been worried about the strength benefits of doing a handstand pushup.
Uh-huh.
And when I do it, I will have to keep my feet on the wall. But I think that the information in the book is detailed enough that I think I'll be able to start being successful if I try to balance on my hands and use, treat that more as a skill work versus something that I need to rest from every other day or something like that. And I'm excited to read more of it. And I'm sure I'll talk more about it in the next, couple of podcasts that we do, because I'll have read more of it.
Yeah, no, you'll have to show me some stuff. That's something I've never been, handstands have been, I don't know what it is, but I've spent actually some time working on the skill of doing a handstand, mm-hmm. and that balance is really difficult for me.
Yes, it is hard. And one of the things they talked about in the book actually was that hand balancing on parallettes, which is like, you know, like short parallel bars, is easier in the long term than doing hand balancing with your palms on the floor.
Just is that just because of the wrist position?
Yeah, wrist and just general like grip strength is more advantageous from that position. Okay. Because you can squeeze and little
micro adjustments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Small adjustments are easier to get versus when you're on your palms, like it's more through the fingertips and then the heel of your wrist.
Yeah.
And so there's a bigger gap in time. And I think that that just makes it a little bit harder to like, if you start to lose it, you have to react a little bit quicker. And that's what I've noticed at least. And I've just in the last week since just been playing around with the parallettes a little bit. And I've noticed I can get maybe 3-4 seconds at a time versus when I come off the wall with my hands, it's like I immediately come back to the wall.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there's no balancing happening there.
Well, do you think there's just some crutch going on that your body depends on having the wall there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, up until now, I haven't cared about it. It's just
right.
Like, I just want strength. And
so you're just working on the shoulders and not really the balance.
Not really the balance of it. But I know at some point, you know, it'd be a fun goal to set for myself is to be able to do a push-up wall and a handstand mm-hmm. without a wall there.
That'd be cool. But
I know to get there, I'm going to need to get comfortable with being balancing without a wall behind me and then learning how to roll out of it in case I do fall forward.
Yeah.
Coming down backwards away from my hands is fine. I can do that no problem, but it's coming out of it forwards that I'm a little leery about still. Yeah. So
well, that's a good skill to have and always have.
Yes.
Is the rolling.
Rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, doing it from a standing position, I have no fear of. I can kind of do that little ninja roll over the shoulder on both sides just fine. It's just coming from the opposite direction.
Yeah.
You have to kind of lower yourself down into a somersault. And historically, when I've done somersaults in the past, I always feel like I smack my back flat on the floor when I do it.
Yeah.
So I'm not very skilled at that.
That's you'll get there.
I got to practice. It's a skill.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have just gone through a new book myself, and that is the deadlift and squat manual that Louis Simmons mm-hmm. has written. And I can't remember when he wrote it, but it's been giving me some really good ideas and perspective. I mean, he just deals with the strongest people on the planet, and some of the numbers that he puts up or he talks about in his book are kind of intimidating. You know, he's like, I got this many dozen people that have squatted over 800 pounds, and it's just...
Yeah, that is pretty crazy.
And so he'll put some of the programs in there of what they have done, mm-hmm. and just seeing those numbers is intimidating. But he talks about squatting, you know, at all skill levels and all strengths. And I think I'm going to be, like I alluded to earlier, I'm going to be doing a lot more box squats. Mm-hmm. I'm going to change the volume that I'm doing in squats. And I'm going to start incorporating some of the stuff that I did when I first started squatting every day, changing the variations of squats. I've been primarily doing just the front squat, just the back squat, maybe a pause front squat on a light day.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get more into the box squats. I'm going to get more to the bands. And the chains.
What is the benefit of doing a box squat?
Well, the way he teaches the box squat, you actually relax your glutes when you sit on the box. Mm-hmm. And then you're at a complete, you know, you have to engage your hips and explode out of it. And you're at a dead stop. So there's no momentum. There's no spring in the bottom of the squat like when you're...
Right. So the intention is to let yourself relax a little bit.
A little bit. Not in your core.
Right.
Or your upper back, but your glutes do relax. You kind of rock back and then you pop out of it. And he actually talks about not really doing any back squats at all, hardly at all. They only do
box squatting.
They only do box squats and they do bands and chains. And again, it's hard to argue with someone that has the best squatters in the world at his gym all the time.
Was his reason for not doing regular back squats, was that as like for an injury prevention thing or?
Well, no, he talks more, you know, he's really big on that conjugate method where you're doing lots and lots of different variations of the squats.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says, you know, you get used to doing the same thing over and over and over, your body's going to get used to it and you're going to stay in that spot or you're going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And so constantly changing what your body has to get used to, helps it keep improving. And that worked really good for me when I first started squatting every day. I was doing, you know, a dozen different types of squats and I just kept improving. Mm. Not that I'm not improving now in the squat, but I think it's time for a change. And so when I get done with this program, I'll be going more to the conjugate style. And then they do like a max effort day. And then 3 days later, 72 hours later, they do a dynamic day where they're really focused on speed. They cut down the weight quite a bit, and it's a lot of speed. So that's something I really struggle with. I'm really slow squatter.
Mm-hmm. Kind of grind it out.
Grind it out. So I definitely need to work on my explosiveness, and hopefully this will go into a pattern like that where I have a day dedicated just to speed.
Yep.
Will help that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I've read some of Andy Bolton's work, and he was the first 1,000-pound deadlifter, mm-hmm. and kind of broke that threshold. And now how many guys do we have breaking that 1,000-pound threshold?
We have four or six, somewhere around there. I don't know.
Yeah, he's like the Roger Bannister of the deadlift, breaking the 4-minute mile, and then everybody does it the next year.
Yeah.
But anyways, Andy Bolton's a huge proponent of speed in everything. Mm-hmm. And he's a very hip-driven deadlifter and has written many articles and a few books on the benefits of how kettlebell swings have helped his deadlift because of the speed component associated with it. And I have to agree with him, actually. I've noticed personally that every time I start thinking that I don't need a kettlebell swing in my program, then I start realizing I get slower.
Yeah.
And I run pretty regularly, except the last couple of weeks because of this hamstring of mine. But other than that, I'll sprint 2-3 times a week. And the times that I'm swinging kettlebells regularly, and it doesn't seem to matter what weight I'm swinging it, as long as I'm focusing on maximal effort, I always feel faster versus if I let them get out of my program for various reasons, and then I keep sprinting. It's like I never feel like I've got quite that pop in my step. So there's definitely something to that speed part, and that's something I try to emphasize in all of my lifts, like whether it be a pistol squat or an airborne lunge or anything like that. It's like I try to come up as fast as I can, even though I'm controlling it down slowly. Come up as fast as I can every time and really kind of forcefully extend that hip, cramp the thigh, get my get those joints to lock out hard at the top. I think if I get a little lazy with that, especially when I get tired at the end of a set or something like that, then I'm not furthering my goal, which is, you know, power and speed, because that part is important to me. So there's definitely something to that.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's been a great show. Thanks for having me to your gym.
You bet.
And let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, Greg.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Be sure to go to hammershed.com and sign up for our monthly giveaway. Each month, we'll be giving away something to one of our listeners. Sign up once, and you'll be entered to win all year round. Also, make sure to give us a review on iTunes. It's a great way to support the show. Until next time, train hard, train heavy, and remember, consistency is king.